everybody, and welcome in to a special podcast right here on Sports Talk Chicago. On today's show, we'll be analyzing some MLB news and notes with a very special guest. Plus, we'll also take a look at the AL Rookie of the Year Award voting and how Shohei Ohtani ends up sizing up against a few other candidates in the run-in. So once again, it's another busy show here at Sports Talk Chicago, and I'm so glad that you're here joining us on today's program. Before we get started, make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports. And hit me up personally on Google+, Instagram, and LinkedIn at John Zags, on Twitter at John Z Sports, and now on Facebook at John Zagluo. Today's show is brought to you by Mucci World, where inspiration meets creation. Call 708-247-2100 to book parties, paint your own pottery, and have art classes for adults and children. Mucci World, creativity at its finest. And by the Windy City Thunderbolts. Now that the 2018 season is over, get ready for 2019. Season tickets go on sale in March. Well, in regards to today's podcast, I really think you're going to enjoy today's guest. Now, of course, he brings some great MLB knowledge to the table, and of course, he's an amazing broadcaster, one of the best in the biz, but at the same time, you're truly getting a story out of our special guest today. He's come from a baseball family. His dad played in the MLB for over a decade and even made some all-star teams later in his tenure with the Royals. And remember, even our guest himself pitched in college. So he comes from a very baseball-oriented family. He's got so much inside knowledge on the game, so it'll be fun to talk with him about some logistics as well as some MLB news and notes. And with that, it's time for our special guest. After playing minor league baseball with the Los Angeles Angels in the early 1990s, he turned to broadcasting, starting with the Newark Bears of the Atlantic League. By 2004, he joined the Texas Rangers broadcast booth, providing both play-by-play and color commentary. In 2009, he became the first personality to ever appear on MLB Network. And since 2010, he's been the TV voice of the Los Angeles Angels. Please welcome Victor Rojas to the show. Victor, how are you doing today, and thank you for being here on the show.
John, my pleasure, and I'm doing all right. I can't overly complain, although if you look back at the Angels season this year, it's been a long, rough one, but so far they're finishing strong, so that's a good sign.
Well, to start today, Victor, I did want to talk about some Angels baseball, starting with Shohei Ohtani, and his story has been interesting, to say the least, coming over from Japan and doing so well on the field, both at pitching and hitting. How unique has it been for you to watch him play at such a high level from both sides of the diamond?
You know, it's been interesting in that, you know, once we had the press conference in December last year, and all the buildup going into spring training, you know, all we had to really go off of what were the videos from Japan, and so we didn't know what the expectation was going to be. I think early on everyone felt that he was going to make the 25-man roster, and they didn't think that he was going to struggle as much as he did in spring training. And once he did, the questions began to be asked of Mike Soch and Billy Epler as to whether or not Sho would get the opportunity to break camp with the big club. And, you know, John, he made this one adjustment in the freeway series. We always play the Dodgers three games, but right at the end of spring training before the regular season. And it was at Dodger Stadium. He got rid of the leg kick and went to just like a little mini toe tap or a twist of the toe. And he's been the legend of Shohei Ohtani was kind of born on that day at Dodger Stadium. Didn't go down to the minor leagues. And while he has had some times of adjustment and struggles at the major league level, he's just been incredible, and on both sides of the baseball, as you pointed out, from an offensive standpoint, having to learn the league, backgrounds, the culture, everything, and then, of course, making the transition to the mound and a new baseball, type of baseball, and the mounds themselves, the backgrounds behind the plate, and making those adjustments. So for a kid 24 years of age, and I know he signed when he was 18 when he got drafted in Japan, and so he has professional experience behind him, to be able to transition the way he has, to do both things at the highest of levels, has just been incredible to watch and kind of unfold, really.
He's definitely been an electric player, but now there's a problem, obviously, with his torn UCL. And what I found interesting is that the Angels are still going to use him, and they have been for this season, despite that torn UCL, as far as hitting goes. Where do you see Shohei lining up next season, knowing that that torn UCL is still there? Do you see him getting Tommy John surgery, or how will the Angels end up approaching this situation?
Well, I think that the reason that he's in the lineup still and through the end of the season is because Shohei wants to bat. It doesn't affect him whatsoever. The doctors have said it won't affect it. It's not going to get any worse. The injury is what it is, and whatever course of action they decide to take, that'll really be announced probably once the season is over. You know, there have been some articles over the last couple of days that seem to indicate that if he were to have Tommy John surgery and start a rehab program from a pitching standpoint, that it would not perhaps interfere with the hitting side of things. So, you know, like everyone's different, correct? So you can't measure one Tommy John surgery with another because every individual is different, the surgery is different, the type of injury, and so on and so forth. So until they get into the elbow, and if that's what they decide to do, and have a surgery and kind of get after it from a rehab standpoint, we really don't know what the timetable for a return is going to be. I would anticipate, from everything I'm hearing and gathering from Shohei and the Angels organization, that if he is capable of hitting and it won't interfere with the rehab of the elbow, so that if the timetable for his return to the mound is 2020, and I'm just throwing that out there because that seems to be kind of the timetable for most UCL injuries, that they will probably use him to hit next year. And so it's difficult not to look at that considering what he's been able to do in the second half of this year coming back from that injury and solely focusing on the hitting side of things, plus having that tandem of Trout and Ohtani, most times back-to-back, other times, you know, in that 3 and 5 spot with Upton sandwiched in between, seems to be a pretty good combination. So if there's a one way or somehow of keeping that intact going into 2019, with especially having to have that surgery, I think the Angels and Shohei will certainly explore it.
Do you see Ohtani as a viable Rookie of the Year candidate? Because I know he's missed some time this year, but as far as WAR goes, he's still right up there amongst AL rookies. Do you see him ending up winning the award or at least contending?
I think he deserves the award, and I think he's absolutely going to win it. That's just my opinion. That's not taking anything away from what Miguel Andujar has done and Gleyber Torres have done for the New York Yankees. But you know, had he not been on this string that he's on now over the last couple of weeks where, I mean, his OPS has been, I think, about 1,800 over the last 7 to 9 games. He has just been on fire. And had it not been for that, then I'd say it might be a tough go to kind of beat that East Coast media. And I get it because Andujar is certainly very deserving. I think if there was one guy, it'd be Miguel that I'd go with. But when you factor in what Shohei's been able to do offensively and in a limited number of at-bats, when you start looking at OPS and extra base hits, he's under 300 at-bats, which is far fewer than what Andujar has done. And then you add that he had 10 starts and has a 3.5 ERA with 60 strikeouts. You know, this isn't a position player pitching. This is a legit ace on the mound for 10 starts prior to the injury. That's hard to overcome. I mean, and doing it fairly seamlessly, even with all of the struggles that he had in spring training, being able to accomplish what he has, there's no doubt in my mind he should be the American League Rookie of the Year.
And going to the AL MVP race, I know Mike Trout is still making a convincing case despite his missed time. Now, sabermetrically, Trout is the favorite. I mean, his WAR is right up there, right next to Betts, and his OPS Plus, I believe, leads the AL. Do you see his injuries costing him the award, or do you see Trout making a run as well for the AL MVP?
You know, it seems like every year we have this discussion as to, you know, what the meaning of MVP is and whether or not they should play for a winning team or and so on and so forth. You know, Mike, year in and year out, puts out pretty much similar numbers. The injury certainly didn't help. It wasn't just the injury, too. Of course, the passing of his brother-in-law kept him out an extended period of time. So, I mean, Mike's going to put up his numbers, and they're going to be solid. I think the question becomes, you know, is it enough to overcome Mookie Betts in Boston? Or even, for me, J.D. Martinez Mookie obviously does it on the defensive side of things with JD being more of a DH. But if Martinez are somehow to overcome Mookie on the batting average side of things and even somehow sneak out a triple crown because he's right there behind Chris Davis in home runs and he leads in RBIs, that's tough to argue for someone else other than JD Martinez if he's able to accomplish a triple crown. But I think it might be hard-pressed. You know, I think if Mike goes off for the next two-plus weeks, there's a chance. But I sabermetrically, I get it. I just don't know if the voters are gonna side with that solely, especially with the year that the Red Sox have had this year.
You know, you mentioned JD Martinez and his candidacy. Do you have a problem with him becoming a legitimate candidate, knowing that he's only played mostly offense and not defense? Because personally, if he gets a triple crown, rather, I think he should win the MVP award. But what are your thoughts on that?
I don't think it really matters to me. I mean, obviously, you especially when you get a guy like Betts that plays as good as he does on the defensive side of things, that will certainly, for me, if I were a voter, that would sway me. But triple crown is a triple crown, right? When you lead in our average and home runs and RBIs, and I know that there's a lot of folks that really don't care about RBIs from a sabermetric standpoint, that's just, you know, when you look at the number of fellas that have been able to accomplish a triple crown, with Miggy being the last to do it and having won the MVP himself as a pretty much a DH just a couple of seasons ago, it's hard to kind of put the shift or the focus back on someone like Betts to overcome that. And I don't want to disregard either Alex Bregman. I mean, Alex Bregman, the third baseman for the Houston Astros, all of a sudden here of late has just, I mean, he's had a terrific season, but he has been on fire over the last couple of weeks, which is huge for Houston in that they're in a tight little battle for the West. And not only that, with Carlos Correa being actually virtually non-existent because of the back injury and the subsequent plate appearance that he's had, Altuve's been dinged up, Springer was dinged up, Bregman's been the guy that's been the one constant for that Astros team at the hot corner as well.
Victor Rojas here on Sports Talk Chicago. And Victor, your involvement in baseball started as a child because your dad, Cookie Rojas, was a Major League fan favorite, and you yourself played some baseball in college. What was it like as a young kid to be surrounded by the game like you were?
It was fantastic. I mean, we got a chance to grow up at Royal Stadium, now since name changed to Kauffman Stadium, and getting a chance to go there during the summer months and spend time with my dad shagging during batting practice, and you know, getting to know Clint Hurdle and George Brett and Dennis Leonard and Steve Busby and all those guys as a kid was great. Plus, they had some pretty good teams in 75, 76 to 77. And if it weren't for the New York Yankees, maybe they would have gotten to their first World Series prior to 1980 while my dad was still playing. So it really is, especially in that era where guys were just guys still. The money hadn't changed guys yet. Didn't have to worry about social media. It was really just kind of one of those things where there weren't too many young players. It was more of an older type player, and there was a lot of kids that were our age growing up in that same clubhouse. You don't see that too often anymore because the players are so much younger today. They don't start having kids till later on, and so you don't see that. I mean, we had Adrian Beltre in Southern California for this series. And his son is over at third base during batting practice, and he's still, still somewhat young, but probably would have been my age when I was growing up in the 70s with my dad. So I wish we'd see that more often. I wish we'd still see the father-son or father-kids games before a major league game, you know, at some point in the season, so that we could see the dads interact with their kids on the field. But it's something I wouldn't certainly trade anything for, because it was a terrific experience. It opened my eyes to a lot of things, and it certainly cemented my love for the game back when I was a child.
So once you realized that your playing days were over after college, why'd you get involved in broadcasting, and how'd you get your start?
You know, it was really in my early 30s when I hadn't decided what I was going to do professionally. I'd worked in arena football and National Hockey League, and doing just some front office things, thinking that would be the way that I would go. It didn't work out that way, meaning I wasn't completely fulfilled with the situation. And talking with my wife at the time and deciding that I wanted to try this broadcasting thing, that I would give it a whirl. And fortunately, I had a friend of mine that was third base coach for the Bears in Newark, working under Rick Cerrone, the former Yankee catcher. And he gave me the opportunity to kind of come up to Newark. I was living in Fort Lauderdale at the time. And he basically said, you know, why don't you come up, be the assistant GM. You can put the team together because it was an independent team. And then you could do color broadcasts on the radio side because they had a deal with the Seton Hall Radio. And so I did. I moved up there. My wife moved up there. She became the office manager. And before our first season started, our play-by-play guy quit before the season. So I became the play-by-play guy. And then a month into the season, our GM got fired, and I became the general manager. And so I had to kind of handle both aspects of the job, you know, one that I loved and already knew being the front office side of things, and then this broadcasting thing that I was just trying to figure out because I had really no experience. I didn't graduate from college. I had signed in 1990 to play minor league baseball without a degree, and but I knew it was something I had a passion for and a love for, and I wanted to kind of have fun with it. And you know, I was fortunate enough to hook up with MLB.com in their infancy and be on MLB Radio and have a radio show with Jonathan Mayo and kind of get that experience under my belt and hosting a show in the morning and then having it lead to the 2002 All-Star Game in Milwaukee and getting a chance to call some innings of that for the All-Star Game on the play-by-play side and having a really good call. I'll never forget it. Jimmy Rollins at first base and Damian Miller at the plate, and he shot a double to the alley in left center field, and Rollins scored all the way from first. And I nailed the call, and it was the first time in my life that I sat there and I listened. I'm like, that sounds legit, you know. And it really solidified my love for what I wanted to do and that my path. And so I decided that I wanted to concentrate on the broadcasting thing, and I got lucky. To be perfectly honest with you, I was introduced to an agent who was mentoring me at that time, hadn't taken me on as a client, but one of his clients was moving on from Arizona, and he actually put in one of his clients for a job in Arizona that opened up the radio job in 2003, and Kevin Kennedy, you know, was still doing Fox Saturday Baseball at that time, and the Diamondbacks said they'd love to have Kevin, but they wanted someone to do 162 games on radio. And my agent at that time, or representative at the time, threw my name out there, threw my CD their way. And, you know, I wasn't necessarily young, but I was cheap because I was coming from independent ball with virtually no experience. But I did have this little cachet of the fact that I grew up in a baseball family. And Scott Guyer and the Diamondbacks gave me my first break, and it's been a whirlwind since. John Blake hired me away later on that year, and I spent five seasons with Texas. It snowballed into MLB Network. Again, something I didn't have any experience with as far as doing TV. And Tony Petitti and John Entz gave me the opportunity to go to New Jersey and launch this incredible network that's still going strong today. And, you know, Artie Moreno, with the passing of Rory Marcus in January of 2009, you know, reached out to me through Tim Mead and asked me if I would be interested in talking to them about their opening on the TV side in 2010. Otherwise, I'd probably still be at MLB Network. I mean, I love the opportunity. I was a novice. I didn't know the business, but I knew I loved what I was doing on a nightly basis with, you know, with Harold and Barry and Al Leiter and all those guys, Dan Plesac, just great guys to work with and to learn from. And I probably would still be there had it not been for the unfortunate passing of Rory Marcus. And now nine seasons later, you know, here I am finishing up my ninth season with the Angels. So it's kind of come full circle, especially since my dad worked there in 82, from 82 to 92 and managed them in 88. Yeah, that was my second team. I grew up with Kansas City because that's where I grew up. But, you know, I went through the hardships of 82 and 86 with the Angels in Milwaukee and, of course, with the Boston Red Sox beating the Angels in 1986. So I kind of, and having signed with them in 1990, I'm very partial to that franchise and certainly thankful to Artie and the guys for having given me the opportunity to call games for them.
Well, what a great journey. And, you know, you've had so many great, successful steps along the way. What do you attribute all of your success to? From going to the Newark Bears, now you've been with the Angels for 9 years. What do you think about your success and how it started for you?
I think it's just really to drive and determination, something I try to tell my kids on a daily basis, that once you decide on a path to follow it and follow your heart and your determination to kind of get to that, the upper echelon, and who knows how long it's going to last. You know, I've been fortunate enough, about 16 seasons now of doing this. You know, would I like to do it for another 16 seasons? Perhaps if I'm given that opportunity, but you know, you never know. It's such a subjective business. Already could wake up tomorrow morning and decide that, hey, that's enough. I want to go in a different direction or different voice or different sound, whatever the case may be. And I'm cognizant of that. I'm certainly not, you know, programmed. And maybe it's because I didn't go to school and I didn't go to the Newhouse School and have a broadcast degree. And that's all I've known my entire life. And maybe it's because I have such a varied background that I feel comfortable in knowing that, hey, the subjectivity behind the business is not going to limit me as a person or as a father or as a husband. That if it's time to move on, it's time to move on, and I'll go do something else. And you know what? I'll be successful at it because I'll put my heart, my energy, and my time into it. And I think that's the biggest thing that you have to believe in, is that there's a grind. Look, doors open for me, perhaps maybe because of my last name, but at the end of the day, you've got to put up or shut up, right? Because if you stink at it or suck at it, you're probably going to get fired, and you're not going to last very long. But if you're good and you believe in your abilities and the feedback's been positive, then don't ever give up on your dream. Keep fighting for what it is that you want. And there's plenty of guys that have made a living in the minor leagues doing this for 20, 30 years. Terry Smith was at AAA for a long time, calling Columbus Clippers games before he got his first break with the Angels in 2002. And in his first season, he and Rory Marcus on radio, they end up winning a world championship. So, and Terry's still calling Angels games on the radio side. So there's plenty of those type of stories. I know those jobs are few and far between, but there's plenty of those stories out there. And now with the vast avenues available from a media standpoint, especially on the digital side, Amazon and Facebook and Twitter, Netflix, everybody's starting to dabble a little bit, YouTube, on the sports side of things. It's opening up some doors where perhaps they were only just limited to just major league or the major four sports opening. So if there's anybody listening to this, to me, that's what you have to do, is believe in your ability to do it and know that you're going to succeed regardless. Fulfill yourself. Don't worry about fulfilling other people's aspirations or dreams. As long as you feel fulfilled, that's all that really matters at the end of the day.
And, you know, your style also, I think, plays a big role in your success. I mean, your catchphrases and tone during the game is so unique. And I got to know, what's your favorite phrase that you like to use during games?
Well, I think, you know, light that baby up is a pretty good one, because at the end of the day, it's a happy night. You know, the Angels won, and everything's pretty happy. Big Fly has been something that's been with me since I was in Newark, you know, for the home run call. And I don't know where it came from. Obviously, it's a term that we use in the minor leagues and grew up with. It's been around forever, so I certainly didn't originate it. But from a play-by-play call, it's just kind of stuck. I've got friends here in Texas, my Big Fly, when I see them. And that's kind of cool in that regard. But I don't necessarily have any particular thing that I go out or seek out or I jot down that, oh, I'm going to try this today or anything like that. They just kind of evolved. You know, the walk-off thing, to be honest with you, the walk-off call of drive home safely, that's just one of those things that happened. I want to say it was an extra inning game, because or it was late in the game, in the bottom of the ninth or extra innings. It might have been just one of those long afternoons, and it's like, I just want to get home and go to dinner or whatever. It's like, it's what came out of my mouth, and it kind of just stuck. And but I don't worry about that stuff. It just, like you said, my style is unique in that I didn't go to school to do it. I figured it out on my own. I grew up with Denny Matthews, listening to my dad's games, and Denny's still there, God bless him, 50 years later, calling Royals games. And I loved his the dry wit and the snark and the sense of humor that he brought to the table on a nightly basis. And it kind of fits my personality. And, you know, I see the game perhaps a little bit differently than the guys that didn't play it. And I'm myself. I'd be perfectly honest with John. I'm just me. The way I'm talking to you now is kind of the way I do play-by-play. It's just a conversation for me. And that's how I've always described it. And I try to tell young broadcasters all the time. Don't try to be someone else. Just be yourself. Be the best version of yourself and not the second version of somebody else, because that's the last thing you want to. You want to stand out. When that tape, CD, audio file gets to someone's desk, it's making the decisions. You want that thing to stand out, not just another play-by-play guy. And so I think I try to really hammer the point of differentiate yourself from somebody else by just being you, you know. And you know, for the most part, I think it works out. I think it opens up the eyes of some broadcasters of not being Joe Broadcaster guy or, you know, hey, this is the way so-and-so broadcasts, so I'm going to try to do that. It's good to listen and to get that information and tweak it to your own style, but to try to become someone else or someone that you're not, I think you're just doing really harm to your broadcasting career.
And on a final note, during Players Weekend, you and your broadcasting partner, Mark Gubiza, definitely made a statement with your costumes. I'd love to know the story behind that.
Well, it was the thing is that I don't know who made up the that weekend was originally scheduled to be 80s weekend, and not so then the Players Weekend happened. So we had been promoting 80s weekend, you know, doing promos the games before during the previous week, and so I think it was a Monday. I think we did it on Friday. On Monday, I decided. Gooby and I were like, what are we going to do? And I just texted him. I said, how about Axl Rose and Slash for 80s? And he said, sure. So I went on Amazon. I think I paid $60 for the entire stuff, all the garb. And it just worked out well. You know, we kind of started doing this a little bit in the last couple of years with the Halfway to Christmas thing. And he's dressed up as Buddy the Elf. We did National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation a couple of years ago. This year we decided to go with the Heat and the Cold Miser. And you know, we had the Stormtroopers fill in for us doing the we voiced our open and some promos with Stormtroopers in costume for Star Wars Night. So it's kind of become this thing for us as to what are we going to do and how are we going to top things. And so I think it's going to start costing us some money because we're going to have to get into some real costumes going into in the next couple of seasons.
Well, Victor, thank you so much for being here on the show. It was such a pleasure to have you on today.
John, my pleasure, buddy.
Well, there you have it. What an honor it was to have Victor Rojas on today's show as we talked with him about some Angels baseball, the AL MVP award race, and the steps he took to become a successful broadcaster. Now, before we finish up today, it's now time for the Announcer's Call of the Day segment. Today, we were fortunate enough to have Victor Rojas on the show, the Angels TV voice. And during the interview, we talked about some of his most famous catchphrases, including Big Fly whenever someone hits a home run. Keep that in mind as Albert Pujols steps into the box, sitting on home run number 599. Here's Victor Rojas with the call.
The 1-2. Breaking ball toward left field. Holding the line. This one's got a chance to go. Go! Big Fly for Albert Pujols. Number 600!
A historic moment for Albert Pujols and a great call, as always, by Victor Rojas. Well, that does it for us here at Sports Talk Chicago. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at Chi-Talk Sports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Zags and on Twitter at John Z Sports. Also, make sure to subscribe to the website. You can find the email subscription box on the homepage of the site. Simply enter in your email, then click yes on the confirmation email, and you'll be subscribed. Anytime a new article or podcast is published, you'll get it directly to your email. And finally, Sports Talk Chicago is now on iTunes and Google Play. Simply search Sports Talk Chicago, and you'll be able to find every podcast from the 2018 calendar year. Thank you again for listening to today's show, and have a great day.